After an ugly loss to the Brewers on Wednesday night, I think one thing has become clear for the Orioles. They are a good team, but to get over the hump, they're going to need to add a little bit at the trade deadline. And they can do it. They've got the best system in baseball, but the question is, which of their top prospects will they be willing to deal? We'll talk about who they could trade coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast.
You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Today is Thursday, June 8th, 2023, and welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb. And coming up on today's episode, we are going to start by recapping a bad Orioles loss as they fell 10-2 to the Milwaukee Brewers on Wednesday night, dropping the three-game series in Milwaukee. I'll get you the five things you need to know from that one, including a bad start from Dean Kramer, a great start from Corbin Burns, and what is going wrong with the Orioles offense. But then we'll look into the Orioles prospects, still the number one system in baseball in Baltimore, but they're going to have to use some of those prospects to go get some big league talent at the trade deadline. So I'm going to look at the Orioles' top 10 prospects right now and rank them in terms of how likely the Orioles would be to trade them for a major league player at the trade deadline. But that's all coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast, which is brought to you by Bird Dogs. Go to birddogs.com/lockedonMLB, and when you enter the promo code LockedOnMLB and you buy a pair of their amazing shorts or pants, they'll also throw in a free custom Bird Dogs Yeti-style tumbler with every order. So we're going to jump in here to start with an Orioles loss to the Brewers, but just a quick little content update here at the top of the pod. This happened yesterday as well, going to be happening on today's episode and for Friday. If you are watching on YouTube here on the Locked On Orioles YouTube channel, make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. But also, as you can see, no video for the podcast today, just because, as I've mentioned on the pod this week, I am traveling for work this week and really just because of an internet situation, not really able to get you the video pod this week, but the audio pod's still the same, and hopefully I gave you something you can watch if you are viewing it on the YouTube channel. But let's jump into the O's loss. Brewers 10, Orioles 2, the final score from Milwaukee on Wednesday night. Orioles have now dropped the first two games of a three-game series on the road against the Brewers, meaning the O's have now lost the series and have lost three out of their last four series, lost two out of three at home to the Rangers, two out of three at home to the Guardians, then 1-2 of 3 on the road against the Giants and have now lost this series to the Brewers. O's now 37-24 on the season, still have the third best record in baseball, still second in the AL East, but in a little bit of a skid here in kind of late May and early June. But I'm going to get you the five things you need to know from the Orioles 10-2 loss to the Brewers. And the first thing you need to know is I am tired of seeing Joey Weimer. I hope he gets a day off on Thursday here in the day game and the O's don't play the Brewers again. I hope we don't have to see him because he is basically turning into the younger version, the new and improved version of Kevin Pillar and Kevin Kiermaier and maybe a little Randall Grichuk in there as well. Joey Weimer hitting out of the nine hole and playing center field for the Brewers in this game was just unreal. 4-for-4 with a double, 2 homers, and 5 RBIs in this game. That follows up, of course, him having the winning hit, the walk-off double in the 10th inning in Tuesday's game when the Brewers beat the O's 4-3 in 10. Weimer continued it with the best game of his big league career on Wednesday night with the 4-for-4 and the 2 homers. The first one was a big one, 2-run shot in the 3rd inning that put them up 3-0, and then his homer later in the game kind of put things away for the Brewers in their 4-run 7th. Yeah, that was just tough to watch. Joey Weimer, not the greatest player in the world, tough to watch him just kill the Orioles. Second thing you need to know is we flip to the Orioles bats. Yeah, nothing is really going right very much for the Orioles on offense, especially in this series. Talked about it on yesterday's episode how on Tuesday night, the Orioles pitching did plenty enough to win that game, but the O's struck out 16 times, only scored 3 runs in that game. Homers from Aaron Hicks and Ryan O'Hearn. Well, the Orioles were very close to being shut out in this game. All they got were 2 runs. It came off of Bennett Sousa out of the Brewers' bullpen in the 9th inning. Orioles ended up loading the bases in the ninth inning, got an RBI single from Austin Hayes. Then Ryan McKenna grounded into a double play, which scored another run. But the two runs on just five hits for the Orioles in this game. Once again, back-to-back nights, they drew only one walk that was once again drawn by Adley Rutschman in this game. And the strikeouts were not as big an issue, but they were still an issue when you have just the one walk and then you end up striking out nine times. It becomes an issue in the game. And that's exactly what happened to the Orioles once again. I mean, you only have the five hits. You get one from Ramon Urias off the bench, which was good to see because he was 2-for-25 since coming off the injured list. So nice to see him get a single in the ninth inning. Austin Hayes got a hit, the RBI single, as I mentioned. And then Aaron Hicks, Gunnar Henderson, and Jorge Mateo all had singles. But five hits, zero extra base hits in this game for the Orioles. The offense is just slumping. And you've got Urias slumping. It was great to see Gunnar Henderson back in the order. I mean, that was huge. He missed the last couple of games with that back tightness. He was back in with a 1-for-3. But, I mean, you know, Josh Lester gets the start, goes 0-for-3. Ryan O'Hearn an 0-for-3. I mean, Mateo had to hit it, but he's slumping. Santander an 0-for-3 with a strikeout. He's slumping. Adam Frazier 0-for-3 with a strikeout. He's slumping again. It's really not a good combination right now for the O's offense, and it is certainly showing. Third thing you need to know from this one is one of the guys who was not in the lineup for the Orioles was Ryan Mountcastle, who sat once again for the O's, second time in the last handful of games that Mountcastle has been out of the order after he was basically an everyday player for the first 2 months of the season or so. And Mountcastle's really been struggling lately. He's in another really tough stretch here for the Orioles, and he's hitting just 170 with one home run and 17 strikeouts in his last 14 games. That dates back to May 20th. And I don't think we're seeing Mountcastle fully turn into a part-time player. You know he's going to hit another hot streak. There's just too much talent in that bat and the batted ball profile. He's going to get hot again and, you know, be the Orioles' best hitter. He's still leading the team in RBIs and home runs, so he's still an important piece of this Orioles lineup. But the bat's looking a little shaky right now for Ryan Mountcastle. And quite frankly, maybe he fits into a platoon for a little bit here. I mean, I know Ryan O'Hearn, who got the start over him at first base, did go 0-for-3 with two strikeouts on Wednesday night. But O'Hearn's been really good lately, had the big go-ahead home run in the seventh inning on Tuesday night. And Mountcastle's splits are pretty dire so far this season. Mountcastle against left-handed pitchers has been absolutely dominant. Ryan is hitting .311 with a .1017 OPS against lefties this year. When you switch it over to righties, he's been terrible. Mountcastle hitting just .195 with a .551 OPS against right-handed pitching this season. That's one of the biggest splits in terms of lefties and righties of any Orioles hitter so far in 2023. So maybe for a little bit, we do see a platoon. Now, it won't be a straight platoon because you see more right-handed starters than you see lefties, and you don't want to sit Mountcastle that much because you know the potential in his bat. And he's going to play against every lefty, but maybe every other righty at this point, you sit him in favor of an O'Hearn or a Josh Lester or someone else, and you see what you can get out of those other bats in the lineup. Fourth thing you need to know going over the pitching side for the Orioles, Dean Kramer was bad in this game. Five innings pitch for Kramer. He's allowed six runs on nine hits. Did have five strikeouts to no walks, which was good, but he allowed two home runs in this game through 93 pitches and allowed six hard hit balls on the day. Now, for Kramer, the six earned runs, surprisingly, was actually the most he's allowed all season. He was not good in the month of April, had a bunch of bad starts, but he never gave up more than five runs in any of those April starts. He allows six in this one to the Brewers' order, and it started quickly. Second batter of the game was Willy Adames. First day off the injured list, he hits a monster home run to make it 1-0. Then I mentioned the Joey Weimer homer in the third inning, gave up a run in the fourth, and then two more in the fifth and a two-out rally by the Brewers, and the day was done for Kramer. And again, it's at least a good sign that even though you had a bad day, you strike out five, you don't walk anyone. He had nine whiffs. You know, his fastballs were playing up, but it was another one of those games where Kramer just went basically all fastballs. Of his 93 pitches, you look at the breakdown, and just 14 of the 93 pitches were off speeds. Eight changeups, four curveballs, and two sweepers. You compare that to the three fastballs, 31 sinkers, 27 cutters, 21 four-seamers. Fastball heavy has worked for him at times this year. It clearly wasn't working in this game against Milwaukee. I'm surprised he didn't go away from it a little bit sooner, and it just hurt him in this game. And that had been six straight really good starts for Kramer. You know, his five starts in May were great, had a 2.45 ERA in the month. His first start of June was really, really good, where he gave up two runs
over six innings. You know, he had been good in that one against the Giants, but just didn't happen here in Milwaukee. Hopefully he can brush that one off. But switching over to the Brewers on the pitching side, well, I do want to give a shout-out to Bruce Zimmerman. Listen, he wasn't great. He did give up four runs in his second appearance of the year out of the bullpen for the Orioles. But, hey, he did save the pen. After Kramer went five, Zimmerman was able to get through all three of the remaining innings, allowed four runs on seven hits. But with four Ks, no walks, one home run, he threw 61 pitches. Probably means he's going to be optioned pretty soon because he's not going to be available for a couple days out of the bullpen. But, hey, that's pretty much a full off day for the pen now, and the Orioles have all of their bullpen ready to try and avoid a sweep on Thursday. But over to the Brewers pitching side for the fifth and final thing you need to know is that Corbin Burnes was awesome in this game. One of his best starts of the year for Burnes, who struggled a little bit at times this season. He goes eight scoreless against the O's. They had no chance. Just two hits, nine strikeouts, no walks, 96 pitches, just three hard hit balls by the Orioles against Corbin Burnes. They got three more in that two-run ninth inning against Bennett Sousa, but only had three in the eight innings against Burnes, who just diced them up, I mean, all night long. Burnes looked like that former Cy Young winner that he is. The cutter was amazing. You know, he threw it 65 of his 96 pitches, and the O's just had no chance. Eight whiffs on the cutter, bunch of, you know, soft hit balls in play, bunch of foul balls, 20 called strikes on that cut fastball. He was dotting it everywhere around the strike zone. And it makes you think, you know, Corbin Burnes, yes, the Brewers are a good team. And yes, you know, they're sitting in first place in the NL Central. You know, they're now 34-28 after this win, and they're an aspiring playoff team. But we know how the Brewers operate, and Burnes is a free agent after 2024. And there's talks, you know, especially how badly things went between him and Milwaukee and arbitration talks this offseason, that he could be dealt at the deadline. Wouldn't it be awesome if that was Corbin Burnes dicing up his future team? But if the O's are going to make a move like that, they're going to have to part with some of their top prospects. They've got the best farm system in baseball. They're going to have to use it to go get an ace starter or maybe a bat to help out the lineup. But the question is, if they do make a move like that at the deadline, which players would they be willing to part with? Well, coming up next, we're going to try to figure that out. Ranking from 10 to 1 in the Orioles' top 10 prospects, who the O's are most likely to trade at this year's deadline. But first, this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast is brought to you by Bird Dogs. Now, Bird Dogs, they're the most amazing shorts I have ever worn. I've got two pairs, and they are so, so comfortable. Now, Bird Dogs has pants as well, but I'm wearing the shorts. They are amazing. They make you look good. They've got these stretch khaki shorts that are designed to fit slimmer through the thigh and the leg, giving you that kind of sculpted look. And Bird Dog shorts, they do really great things because they are so comfortable, and they look so good, and they fit better than any regular short you could get. And the fabric is awesome. They invented cloud knit fabric that looks like khaki shorts, but stretches, so you get a better fit, you don't sacrifice movement. They are super, super comfortable, and they use anti-stink sweat wicking fabric that helps you stay cool and dry all day long, especially here in the summer when you are wearing the Bird Dogs. They look good. They feel good. They are my favorite shorts to earn. And if you go to birddogs.com/lockedonMLB and enter the promo code LockedOnMLB, you get a free Yeti-style tumbler with your order. That's birddogs.com/lockedonMLB for a free Yeti-style tumbler. You won't want to take your Bird Dogs off. We promise you. So the Orioles fall to the Brewers 10-2 on Wednesday night, officially dropping the series. They will try to avoid the sweep here on Thursday. Kyle Bradish going against Colin Rea. And you can catch every pitch of the Orioles' hometown radio broadcast on the SiriusXM app. That is the SXM app. Just download it and search Orioles. But for the O's, they got a front row seat to Corbin Burnes dominating on Wednesday night. Eight scoreless with nine strikeouts and no walks. And I would love for the Orioles to trade for Corbin Burnes. He seems to be one of those dream aces that O's fans would want at this year's deadline to really propel this Orioles team into the postseason. Because as we know, they're probably going to need an ace and maybe some more, maybe some offensive help, seeing the struggles with the bats they've had recently. But the big question becomes, you know, what's it going to take for the O's to get one of these players? Because they certainly have the prospects to do it, right? They got the number one system in baseball. It's super deep, especially when it comes to hitting prospects. They've got what it takes to trade for any player in baseball at this point. The question is, who are they willing to trade away? That's the big question. That's a $1 million question for the O's at this year's deadline, which is less than 2 months away. Now, I wanted to take a look at who the O's could deal, because yeah, there's some other players they could trade that are outside their top 10. Some of the names I looked at, you know, Cesar Prieto doesn't really have a spot to get to, but hitting almost 400. Hudson Haskin, a good talent in the outfield, but just blocked by too many other outfielders. John Rhodes, the same kind of thing in AA. And then Braylon Tavera, kind of a younger guy with still a lot of upside that could be dealt. Those are some of the guys that would be like honorable mentions outside the top 10 prospects who could be dealt to get a good player at this year's deadline. But to get the players that are really going to take the O's over the hump, especially when we're talking an ace starting pitcher, the O's are going to need to give up some of their top prospects. So I looked at the top 10 prospects in the Orioles system, this currently according to MLB Pipeline, and wanted to rank them from 10 to 1, from least likely to most likely to be traded at the deadline by the Orioles. This is, in my opinion, with a little bit of research to back it up. So let's start with number 10. This is the least likely of the top 10 prospects to be dealt at the deadline. And I would say number 10 is Jackson Holliday, the 19-year-old stud shortstop who Baseball America just re-ranked their list on Tuesday. And Holliday was at number 2 on their list. Ellie De La Cruz, who's been amazing in his debut for the Reds, he's their number 1 prospect. He's already in the bigs, which means a month from now, De La Cruz is going to graduate. And Jackson Holliday is going to be the number 1 prospect, which means this offseason, Holliday will be the number 1 prospect, giving the Orioles the number 1 Baseball America prospect in the offseason for 3 straight years. With Rutschman, Henderson, and Holliday, it's never been done by any team before. Holliday's still 19, just tearing it up in A-ball this year, hitting .351 on the season. OPS over 1,000, 6 homers, 13 doubles, just one more strikeout than walks. He's been amazing at the plate. I don't think they're going to trade him this year. They think he's going to be a perennial all-star and an amazing big leaguer. Number 9 on the list would be DL Hall. Now, if things were going a little differently for Hall, maybe I would put him a little higher on the list. But the 24-year-old lefty is in this weird deloading process in AAA where he's only throwing about 3 innings per start. I think eventually, pretty soon, the Orioles are going to call him up to be a part of the big league bullpen like he was at the end of last year. I just think that's the best way for him to help the Major League Orioles right now. And I continue to say it, Hall is one of the best 13 arms in the organization right now. That means he needs to be on this team if they're really trying to get to the playoffs. And I do think that means he'll be in the big league bullpen soon enough, which means the O's don't want to trade him now, especially when his value is lower. I mean, when he's being deloaded and not pitching enough innings. 9 starts, 35 innings. He's got a 4.89 ERA with 45 Ks and 19 walks so far this season. I just don't see them trading DL Hall. Number 8 on the list would be Colton Cowser, who just got back from injury to rejoin AAA Norfolk, hitting .347 this year with a .484 on base. He has a .1074 OPS with 8 homers, only 4 more strikeouts than walks on the season. Cowser's been amazing. Yeah, he could be a trade piece, but the 23-year-old left-handed hitter and outfielder, I just feel like, especially with this Cedric Mullins injury, it's something we've talked about, just feels like he's too much of a replacement potentially pretty soon here for Mullins, who's on the IL. And if he's in that much of the O's plans, the big leagues this year, I just don't see them trading him away at this point. Number 7 on the list for me would be Dylan Beavers, the 21-year-old outfielder who the Orioles took early in the draft last season. He's in high A right now with Aberdeen, and he's had his struggles, hitting just .215 with a .303 on base and a .360 slugging, 12 homers, or 12 doubles, I should say, 3 homers, but 53 strikeouts to just 22 walks on the season. The big thing with Beavers and why he's lower on this list is that, A, yeah, the numbers aren't great, so maybe his value's a little down, but B, the Orioles are still in the midst of putting him through a swing change this season. That was the number one thing that came out about Beavers, even before the Orioles drafted him, just when he was putting up great numbers at Cal and he was jumping up everyone's draft boards. Every scouting analyst was saying, hey, this guy's going to be amazing, but whatever team drafts him is going to need to put him through a swing change because his swing is just too crazy to work at the big league level. So he's doing that during the season right now. John Mioli had a great piece in the Baltimore Banner last week, kind of detailing, you know, how it's going for Beavers, why he's struggling, and what he's working on, kind of behind the scenes and during games. Definitely go check out that piece. But the Orioles are not going to trade a guy while in the midst of a swing change when his stats are looking like that to other teams. Number 6 on the list, I would go with Heston Kerstad, 24-year-old outfielder who just got promoted to AAA. Unfortunately, hasn't been able to play a game for the Tides yet. Their last 2 games this week in Scranton-Wilkes-Barre have been postponed due to those the awful smoke and the haze and the sky and the just bad breathing conditions outside, basically, that has taken over the Mid-Atlantic area at this point. Like, stay safe out there, you know, if you are going outside this week in the Baltimore area. But the Tides games have been postponed because of that, so we haven't gotten to see Kerstad in a AAA uniform yet. But in AA this year, hit .310 with a 959 OPS, 11 homers, 10 doubles. I just think for the Orioles, they're kind of so invested in Kerstad coming back from the injuries and the health issues, and they keep promoting him. And the fact that he could play first base, has the left-handed power that's going to be just so perfect for Camden Yards. I do not see them splitting up with Heston Kerstad at this point. So those are the five guys in the top 10 prospects who, yeah, I'd be a little surprised if any of those guys are dealt at the deadline by the Orioles this year. But the other five I'm going to talk about, well, I could see any of those five being traded for a legit big league player. So coming up next, to finish off the pod, ranking the top five most likely Orioles top 10 prospects to be dealt for a legit pitcher, maybe legit bat, at this year's deadline. So as the O's know, they'll need, you know, a little bit of reinforcement coming up at this year's trade deadline, less than 2 months away. And if they want to go get a real impact player, they're going to have to trade away from their talent pool. Got the best system in baseball, got some amazing prospects. And I'm ranking the Orioles' top 10 prospects in terms of how likely the O's would be to trade them at this year's deadline. So I just went 10 through 6. Let's go 5 through 1 to finish off the pod. Number 5, I put Joey Ortiz, the 24-year-old shortstop who has seen a little bit of time at the big leagues this year, but in AAA has been great again. 320 average, 895 OPS with 10 doubles. Not as much home run power, just 3 of them. He's been sick for a while, basically hadn't played in AAA since the Orioles sent him down about a week and a half ago, but he was in the Tides lineup on Tuesday before their game was postponed. So whenever Norfolk does start playing again this week, looks like Ortiz is back in the lineup, which is a good sign. I just think for Ortiz, you know, he could be traded because of all the middle infield depth for the Orioles, but just with the struggles of Arias and Mateo and others, and the fact that he's already been in the bigs, he's already on the 40-man roster, that takes away a little bit of his value. I can just see the O's calling him up again pretty shortly here and using him in different roles throughout the rest of the season and not wanting to trade him right now. Number 4, I would put Samuel Basayo, the 18-year-old catcher who's having a great season in low A Delmarva so far. Basayo just getting rewarded with that new Baseball America Top 100 prospect list that I mentioned coming out on Wednesday. Basayo checks in at number 82 on the list. He is in a top 100 for the first time in his career. A fast riser in this system at just 18 years old. Power hitting, left-handed hitting catcher who just has an incredible arm behind the dish. Hitting 291 with a 337 on base, 462 slug, 12 doubles and 5 homers. Yeah, the strikeouts are an issue, but he's 18 years old. Now, I don't love the idea of the Orioles trading him away just because I think, I mean, his ceiling is through the roof at this point. But what I will say about Basayo is if you want to capitalize on an 18-year-old who's probably not going to help your big league team until, I mean, I don't know, 2026 at the earliest, and you're in 2023 right now, and by 2026 or before that, you're looking at yourself as a legitimate World Series contender and you're not going to have him until then. If his helium is this good right now and he's moving into the top 100, I would say it might be a good time to deal him if a team really falls in love with him and you can get a great major league player. Basayo could be the perfect guy to trade away right now. Number 3 on the list, I would put Connor Norby, the 23-year-old second baseman who's been playing a lot of outfield this year for Norfolk as well. Got off to a slow start, but has come alive as of late, hitting 294 with a 785 OPS, 17 doubles and 6 homers on the season. Now, the reason not to trade Norby would be he's getting a little more versatile, able to play the outfield, and despite being a right-handed hitter, his power alley is really towards right center field, which is kind of the best it can be for a right-handed hitter at the current version of Camden Yards. But on the flip side, the reason to trade him is it seems like, you know, not just Henderson, but Ortiz and potentially Westberg are ahead of him in the pecking order in terms of getting infield playing time in the big leagues. And so he could be shut out of some of that time right now, which means if he's a prospect that's going to be blocked, it could be a good time to trade him as he starts to hit better and better. And a team would have a lot of control of him. You know, he was just drafted in 2021, doesn't even have to be put on the 40-man roster this offseason. He could be a very tantalizing prospect to another team. Number 2 on the list, I went with Kobe Mayo. Now, I love Kobe Mayo. That power is ridiculous. He's 21 years old in AA, hitting 280 with a 911 OPS, 19 doubles, 7 homers, having a great year. The reason I put him up this high is A, there's a lot of guys ahead of him in the infield, and Jackson Holliday is trying to catch up at this point. B, I feel like Gunnar Henderson specifically could be the third baseman long term, and that's going to be tough for Mayo, whose main position is third base. And 3, the number one attribute for Kobe Mayo is pull side power. He has ridiculous, unbelievable poolside power. But at the new Camden Yards with the new left field wall, a lot of that tool gets taken away. We've seen it happen to Ryan Mountcastle. His number one tool is ridiculous poolside power. And some of it Mountcastle's done to himself with just having bad swing decisions and a terrible chase rate. But also the fact that some of it's been zapped by the new wall. And I could see that happening to Coby Mayo. So basically, Coby Mayo, I mean, he has a higher ceiling on another team than he has with the Orioles just because he'd be playing 81 games a year with that wall, which kind of makes him the perfect player to trade if he's going to be more valuable to another team than he is to you, and he's a really great prospect. That's what Mayo is. So I think he could bring back a really good player. And then number one on this list, it's going to be Jordan Westberg. 24-year-old shortstop. I talked about it on Tuesday's mailbag episode. Go back and listen to that one. Why in the world he's not in the big leagues yet. And one of the big things I talked about is it feels like a trade's got to be on the horizon. It feels like Westberg's just that perfect guy. He's not the defender that Ortiz is. He's not the offensive player that Henderson is. And he's not as versatile as some of the other infielders and doesn't have the upside of a guy like Jackson Holliday. So he's kind of caught in the middle of all these shortstops right now. He's trying to play third and second and trying to play a little outfield to make himself more valuable. And listen, he's hitting 308. He's got a 988 OPS. He's got 15 homers. He had a great year in AAA Norfolk. But he's had, you know, about 650 plate appearances in Norfolk between 2022 and 23, well over the threshold that generally gets a player called up. You got Mateo struggling. You got Arias struggling. I can't see why he's not in the big leagues right now. So that kind of leads me to believe he's just the number one guy to be traded. And that's okay, because when you have a great system, you have all these great prospects, they're not all going to contribute to your major league team. There's just not enough spots. So you got to trade some of them to get major leaguers. And as much as I would love to see Westberg dominate in an Orioles uniform, it just, to me, makes more sense to see him dominate in another uniform and have the O's get a legitimate player that they will put on the big league roster right now and will help them right now more than Jordan Westberg would. So that's my rankings of 10-1 of the Orioles' top 10 prospects, how likely they are to be traded for a legit big leaguer at the deadline this year. But let me know in the comments here on YouTube, on Twitter, at Locked On Orioles, how did I do with that list? What did I get right? What did I get wrong? And definitely make sure to give me your list, especially here in the YouTube comments. Write down your list from 10-1, least to most likely to be traded by the Orioles at the deadline in terms of their top 10 prospects. Would really like to know how you all feel about that list. But that'll do it for today's episode. I'll be back tomorrow for one final episode of the week. We'll recap game 3 between the Orioles and the Brewers. Kyle Bradish going on the hill for the O's in that one. Colin Rea, the veteran right-hander, on the hill for Milwaukee. Big chance for the O's. Pretty much the only time in this series where they have the advantage in the pitching matchup. They haven't been swept all year. Remember, they avoided a sweep a couple of weeks ago against the Rangers. Let's see if they can avoid one here, hopefully, against the Brewers. I'll recap that on tomorrow's episode. I'll get you ready for a weekend series, which could be a get-right series for the O's. They host the Royals at home. And then also a little bit of chat about the Orioles' offense and what can be done to change their fortunes at this point. But that's all coming up on tomorrow's episode. Until then, I'm Connor Newcomb, and this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.